Here's Andy Udman.
I think consumers need to be more savvy to the corruption in the pharmaceutical industry. You know, about half the population is taking pharmaceutical drugs, yet people think that they're safe and they're effective. They think that they've been scrutinized by groups like the FDA or Health Canada, but this just isn't the case. There is not enough scrutiny. There's too much blind faith going on, and too many people are having adverse events because of these drugs.
Dametol helps relieve anxiety and negative inner dialogue associated with depression, helping you feel safe and secure again. Side effects include drooling, priapsy, dry mouth, constipation, stomach upset, and alcoholism. Ask your doctor if Dametol is right for you.
I used to feel like myself. Now I feel like somebody else. I like it better.
You should know that is a spoof. Although it sounds like the real thing, doesn't it?
Sounds like everything we hear every night at 6:30 when we watch Diane Sawyer.
Absolutely, on ABC News. Folks, I want to make this really simple and really shocking. Listen to what I'm going to say in the next 5 seconds, and then we'll let you think about it. We're going to talk about it for the next hour because it is shocking. Prescription drugs are the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. Let me say that again. Prescription drugs are the fourth leading cause of death. Let me give you a bit more. A forthcoming article for the special issue of the Journal of Law, Medicine, and Ethics, JLME, edited by Mark Rodwin and supported by the Edmund Safra Center for Ethics, presents evidence that about 90% of all new drugs approved by the FDA in the U.S. over the past 30 years are little or no more effective for patients than existing drugs. Most are no better for patients than previous drugs approved as better against these measures. Over the past 30 years, approved drugs have caused an epidemic of harmful side effects, even when properly prescribed. Every week, folks, listen to this. Every week, about 53,000 excess hospitalizations and about 2,400 excess deaths occur in the United States among people taking properly prescribed drugs to be healthier. One in every five drugs approved ends up causing serious harm. Wow, there's another gem. One in every five drugs approved ends up causing serious harm. You talk about Russian roulette. While one in 10 provides substantial benefit compared to existing established drugs. But back to that original opening statement, prescription drugs are the fourth leading cause of death. So, Pam Colleen, when we're watching Diane Sawyer and ABC News and we see all these commercials and we listen to the last 30 seconds of each of those commercials, when they talk about, and I facetiously describe it as when your eyes pop out of the front of your head and you have diarrhea for life, they're not exaggerating.
Mm-hmm.
There are some very nasty side effects to many, many drugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the way I look at it, Andy, all of these drugs in the marketplace are supposed to be making us healthier as a society, and that's not what we're seeing today. The last number I looked at was that there were about 17,000 drugs on the marketplace today. 17,000 drugs, and look at how sick we are. Clearly, our eye is off the target.
You have two incredible experts this morning. Would you introduce
them? Amazing, gentlemen. Yes, they're both experts in health policy. One is Dr. Tom Light, the other Dr. Joel Lechkin. And they're the authors of a new paper called The Institutional Corruption of Pharmaceuticals and the Myth of Safe and Effective Drugs. Good morning, gentlemen.
Let's start. Good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Lechkin. We appreciate you joining us. Say hello to Pam.
Hi there, Pam.
Good morning.
And Dr. Light. I like that name, Dr. Light. You're not marketing a beer of some kind.
No, I'm not a physician. I'm a PhD.
Mm-hmm.
And my name's Donald. Don, not Tom.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Yeah, I have
Dr. Donald. Pam, go ahead.
Just in terms of pronunciation, it's Lection.
Lection.
Okay.
Like you're going to vote, but without an E.
Okay, terrific.
Lection. Wonderful, yes. And so, gentlemen, how did you collaborate on this article? Why did you start it, and how did it end up that you worked together on it?
Dr. Lechkin.
Well, I'll leave it Don White actually is the one who initiated this, so I'll let him take the lead.
Well, I'm a professor of comparative health systems, and I've been teaching about the Canadian and
Dr. Light, we're going to have to defer to Dr. Lechkin because of a cell phone problem there. Dr. Lechkin, would you take that one?
Sure. This has been an ongoing issue for both Don Light and me, looking at drug safety. And we feel, as the statistics you cited at the start of the show, we feel that those statistics need to be become more widely known for people. So that was really the basis for this article, was to try and first highlight these numbers and second explain why they exist in the first place. So how have we gotten to this state where few drugs that are approved offer any real additional benefit, but on the other hand, cause so many problems. So we, in the context of the U.S., we explored what the political and economic dynamics are that surround what kinds of drugs get developed, how they get approved, and then how they're marketed to both doctors and to patients.
Just to really drive this home, Dr. Lechkin, with our listeners, I'm focusing on that one single line. Prescription drugs are the fourth leading cause of death. If there were one or two drugs that pop into your mind as being in that category, what would they be?
That's difficult to say. There are a number of drugs that are out there that really are pretty dangerous. So a lot of the cancer drugs are dangerous. But then again, you also have to take into account that the conditions that they're treating are also pretty serious. So this is one of the issues that we tried to raise in the paper, which is that if the condition is serious, we're willing to tolerate a lot of side effects. So if you're going to die in the next 6 months and the drug has a chance of prolonging your lifespan, you're willing to take a fair amount of risk. But the problem is that when the drug really doesn't do very much for you, almost any risk is too much.
Now, how is it, though, that the pharmaceutical industry manipulates the data, gets these products to market? How do they get past the, for example, FDA or Health Canada in terms of their ability to scrutinize any potential side effects?
Well, all drugs have to do is to get approved, really, is to be shown to be better than placebo and to have an acceptable safety profile. But what's acceptable is colored because of the nature of the studies that are undertaken. So most of these studies are short term. In other words, up to the maximum is usually about 6 months, whereas some of these drugs are supposed to be taken for life. So you don't have any idea about what the long term side effects are. The other thing is that a lot of the patients who are studied in these clinical trials before drugs get on the market are highly selected. They represent typically fewer than 1% of the people who have the actual problem. They usually have no other problems, and they're usually middle age, which means that we have no idea how these drugs are going to affect people who are taking multiple other medications, people who are elderly, children. So there are when drugs come on the market, there are a whole series of unknowns about their safety. But then what happens is that the drug companies who want to start to recover their money quickly engage in large-scale, massive promotional campaigns for these drugs, which means that they end up getting used in people who have that they were never studied in. And as a result, we see that early on, side effects start to show up, which were completely unanticipated.
Did you say, Doctor, if I understood you correctly, did you say that all it takes for a drug to get approved is that it's shown to be more effective than a placebo, regardless of the serious side effects?
No, the side effects, what's known about the safety has to be acceptable. And what's acceptable, as I said, depends on the condition. So if it's a drug for a common cold, we're not willing or we shouldn't be willing to accept very many side effects at all, because nobody dies from the common cold. You just feel miserable for a week and then you get better. On the other hand, if the drug is for cancer that's going to kill most people within 6 months or a year, we are willing to accept more safety problems associated with the drug because of the seriousness of the condition. But the problem is that when these drugs come on the market, a lot of the safety issues are really just not known.
But what happens, though, when the pharmaceutical industry, who's conducting this research, who's paying for this research, what happens when they're actually withholding data?
Well, first of all, we don't know how much data they withhold because the Health Canada, especially, and to a lesser extent, the FDA, does not release the information that drug companies give them when they're trying to get a drug on the market. Health Canada and the FDA both regard this as what's called commercially confidential information. So the information about the safety of the drug, the information about the how effective it is, are all regarded as confidential and won't be released unless the company that's submitted the data agrees to that release, and usually the companies do not agree.
But look what happened with Vioxx. They, manipulated, they cherry-picked the data, and thousands of people died as a consequence.
That's right. I mean, the company, there are ways of hiding side effects, which Merck engaged in. So, for instance, when it comes to when it came to the studies that Merck did, Merck deliberately did, because it was known that these drugs, that drugs like Vioxx might have cardiovascular consequences, in other words, harm people with heart disease, Merck deliberately did not enroll people with heart disease in their clinical trials. But once the drug was approved and Merck's humongous advertising campaign for it meant that it was going to be prescribed to all sorts of people, including lots of people who had pre-existing heart problems.
Doctor, for people who are just tuning in, can you give us the Reader's Digest version of what you're saying about Big Pharma, about drugs, about whether people should take drugs, about what precautions you would absolutely suggest they take?
Okay, so let's start with Big Pharma. Big Pharma operates in a capitalist environment, and the prime goal of large drug companies, or any company for that matter, is to make profits for its shareholders, its investors. And that's what the big drug companies do. They're engaged in making money, and their method of making money is to make drugs. And so what they will do is they will try and position the drugs that they manufacture and get on the market to get the largest revenue that they can, which means that they will hype the purported benefits of these products downplay the side effects. Now, none of that means that people shouldn't take drugs. So, you know, I've had pneumonia. I took an antibiotic. I got better. And I've had a number of other health problems which have resulted in using medications which have benefited me. And as an emergency room doctor, I prescribe medications to people. So medications, when used appropriately, can be very beneficial, but that means that they have to be used appropriately, which means that both the doctors and the patients have to understand what are the benefits that can be expected and what are the harms that may result. And when the drug companies hide the data that they have about these things, and they do hide them, there's a lot of literature that shows that, then that kind of information gets hidden from both doctors and patients. And that's one of the reasons that we see a lot of the problems that we do with the use of prescription medications.
So the obvious question, if that information were shared and we had the truth about the medications and their side effects, what would the result of that be? How would the present landscape change if we could just get the truth?
Well, getting the truth to start with is not that easy. There are ongoing campaigns that have just been started now. One of them is called All Trials, which is a campaign that started in the UK, backed by people like Ben Goldacre, who is a UK doctor and author. This is a campaign to try and get the drug companies or the regulatory organizations like Health Canada to release all of the data for all of the clinical trials that have been done over the past, I think it's 25 years.
Dr. Lekshin, I'm sorry to interrupt. We're coming down to the bottom of the hour, and so we have to take a brief break for a news update, but I keep coming back to that shocking statement in your report, prescription drugs are the fourth leading cause of death. That terrifies people, and they're wondering how should they react. When we come back, I want to ask you for specific things that people should do to protect themselves against that grim reality that prescription drugs are the fourth leading cause of death in our society. We'll be back with Pam Colleen and Dr. Lekshin in just a moment, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. 10:34 now, if you've just joined us. We're going to summarize our conversation in the last half hour with our Canadian guest, Dr. Lekshin, who is a medical doctor, has been teaching health policy for 12 years at York University, as we wrestle with this startling reality, the prescription drugs are the fourth leading cause of death. The knee-jerk reaction might be, well, I'll never take another drug. No, that's not what Dr. Lekshin is saying. Pam, what is Dr. Lekshin saying?
He's just saying that we need more surveillance. We need better surveillance over these drugs, that a lot of what we're hearing anyway with regards to drugs on the market is related more to hype than reality.
Okay, let's go to the phones. Ron, you have a question.
Oh, I have a comment, actually.
Go ahead.
I've been diagnosed with dermatitis, and my skin has been flaking and peeling. And a follow-up from my dermatitis, dermatologist, they sent me a paper suggesting that maybe I go in and get the metal disc treatment or go in for a UVB treatment. And I took that paper to my family physician, and I asked him what he suggested. And one of the side effects of the UVB treatment to make the dermatitis go away longer is skin cancer. And I asked him, what did you think of that? He says, all prescriptions come with side effects. Skin cancer, that's not good.
Mm-hmm. Ron, how does that leave you feeling? I mean, Dr. Lekshin was talking, okay, we accept more risk when it's a serious illness that we're fighting, but when you're dealing with what you're dealing with, and then the doctor drops a little hand grenade like that, I mean, you must pace the floor trying to think of, well, what do I do?
Well, yeah, because I went in and got my hydrocortisone creams refilled. It seems to control the dermatitis, but the peeling still continues at a certain point. And I've been sitting on that suggestion from the my family physician for almost 2 months now.
Dr. Lekshin, let me just ask you to comment on what Ron has just raised, this absolutely perplexing situation that patients find themselves in when the doctor says to them, well, here's the traditional drug for this particular ailment, but it could do all the nasty things that you hear about in the commercials that you see on ABC News every evening.
Well, I mean, this is a situation that both doctors and patients deal with all the time. And that is, so, and it's often a very personal kind of decision. So how much problem are you facing from how much distress are you having from the health condition that you've got? How serious is it? How much is it interfering with your daily life? And on the other hand, what are the risks of the treatment? So, for instance, if I have a cold and a runny nose, sore throat, I may take some Tylenol because I don't regard Tylenol in low doses as a very risky product. On the other hand, some of the cough cold remedies have a variety of useless and or harmful medications. So some of them can increase blood pressure. And even though that increase in blood pressure might be temporary, I'm not particularly interested in raising my blood pressure just to get relief from a runny nose. So these decisions, as I said, are quite personal sometimes, but they need to be informed by the best evidence that we've got. And right now, as I said earlier in this show, we don't get the best evidence. We get the evidence that the drug companies often just want us to hear. So, for instance, I have a colleague in Vancouver named Barbara Mincy's, who led a project that I was involved with that looked at how much safety information sales representatives from drug companies give to doctors when they go and visit them. And what we found was really that only about 1 in 20 visits do these sales representatives give adequate safety information to the doctors that they're seeing. So this is just one example of how the information that doctors get is highly filtered and distorted.
Well, that raises an interesting point, Ron, and I'm going to ask you how you feel about this. There are two issues here. One is when the doctor gives you a very, very difficult choice to make, which way do you go? And there's nothing we can do to avoid that. But the overarching question is, are you getting the truth? And Pam, that's the issue that we're wrestling with. If, you know, a difficult decision, life is full of difficult decisions, but at least you want facts to deal with. And mm-hmm. especially when it comes to drugs, it's very difficult to get facts.
Yeah, and as you know, we've had Dr. David Healy on the show. He's taking, and along with other medical doctors, they're taking an initiative to start up a surveillance website where people can actually report their side effects or go to that website to find out what other people are experiencing on that drug. We've had Terrence Young on the show, Dr. Lekshin. You probably know Terrence Young.
Terrence.
And he seems like, I don't know where he's at.
Let me just give a little background. Mm-hmm, sure. Terrence mm-hmm. Young is the MP from Oakville whose daughter collapsed because of a drug issue.
Right, she died front of him after taking a prescription drug. And he's basically starting an initiative, I think, to oversee Health Canada, correct? I don't know if you know where things are standing with regards to his efforts.
He's been working at trying to dramatically improve the monitoring that Health Canada does of drugs once they're on the market, and also to try and make sure that Health Canada does a better job of evaluating their safety before they're approved.
Well, without
ongoing project of his.
That's tremendous. Ron, just before we let you go, what is your greater frustration dealing, trying to decide between option A and option B, or having this uneasy feeling that you're really not getting the truth about the drugs that they're prescribing?
The option is, it's hard to deal with. But you know what? You never know the truth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're saying, right, I don't know. That's what we're wrestling with. Do you ever get the truth?
No, you don't. You know what? I heard many doctors say that, for example, aspirin, you know, just something as simple as aspirin, if it were approved today, it would never get approved because it causes internal bleeding or ulcers, for example.
Yeah. Ron, we have to let you go. We have to move on. Dr. Lecture, let me just ask you to comment on that last comment about aspirin.
Should people be taking aspirin for things like fevers, aches and pains? There are safer products. On the other hand, if you've had a stroke and you want to reduce the chances of having a second stroke, I would probably take aspirin. So I think that I'm not sure that aspirin wouldn't be approved currently, but it might be approved for a much more restricted set of indications than it's currently than it currently has.
Now, Doctor, you're part of an international effort as well. You're the chair of the Health Action International Europe Association Board. Can you talk about how widespread this concern is among physicians around the world?
Well, Health Action, first of all, Health Action International is not just a doctor organization. It's got a combination of consumer advocates and health professionals. But this idea, the concern about drugs and how and making sure that they're used appropriately is something that's gaining a lot of momentum. So there's an organization that's based in Australia called Healthy Skepticism that's concerned about this. It has membership around the world. Health Action International has offices both in Amsterdam, Lima, Peru, Kenya.
What a name, Healthy Skepticism. Let me just ask you, if you were to name five drugs that have contributed the most to an organization called Healthy Skepticism, Pam has already mentioned Vioxx. What are the five top drugs, thalidomide? What are the five top drugs that you would name as having contributed most to this Healthy Skepticism?
Well, you've named two of them, thalidomide, which was the one that really triggered all of this, a lot of this concern and a lot of the changes in the way we deal with drugs. Vioxx is a second one. There was a drug that was used in the 1980s for irregular heartbeats, which was written about by an American named Thomas Moore. And he thinks that that particular drug caused even more problems than Vioxx.
What about
death.
Mm-hmm. What about Avandia?
Avandia is certainly an example of a drug that was hyped beyond its benefits. Avandia, diabetes it can be a serious problem, but the problem with the drugs for diabetes, this is the adult onset kind of diabetes, the problem with the drugs is that most of them, or nearly all of them, we don't really know if they are going to reduce the chances of having things like heart attacks or kidney disease, and that applies also to Avandia. The GlaxoSmithKline, the makers of Avandia, did a marvelous job in touting its benefits. This drug was selling billions of dollars a year without any real evidence that it made any difference to people. All it did that we know of was it lowered people's blood sugar. But we don't really care about blood sugar. What we care about mostly is whether or not the drug is going to prevent the serious complications. Avandia has, there's no evidence that it does that.
Well,
but
doctor,
there is evidence that it has serious problems in terms of heart disease.
Dr. Lection, we understand that, you know, it is very difficult to design a drug which addresses a particular health concern, which doesn't have serious side effects. But when we are misled, and especially when we are deliberately misled, it's absolutely maddening. And when the truth is withheld, covered up, and we know the history of corruption in big pharma. Let me read you this headline. I want to ask you to comment on it. Here's the headline from Natural News. Lead Gardasil developer clears conscience, admits vaccine is useless and deadly. I mean, those are the kinds of headlines we are reading on a regular basis now, how we are being misled by big pharma. And you just gave an excellent example, GlaxoSmithKline, with respect to Avandia. How can we trust anything we hear in these commercials on ABC News and so widespread in the media?
Well, I don't think that you can trust commercials for anything, really. Commercials are just that. Commercials are designed to sell products, not to give people objective information. So I would not pay any attention to any of the commercials for any drugs. Unfortunately, that's not the case with a lot of people. That's why the drug companies currently, in the U.S. at least, spend about, I think it's $3.5 billion a year on this kind of television advertising.
So that guy I see on the news every night on the back of the courier truck who agrees to substitute another medication for his Aleve, and then he says, can I have my Aleve back? I mean, that's just an actor reading a script?
Probably. I'm not familiar with that particular commercial, but these are all commercials. Commercials are just that.
So should consumers be more discerning, or should they be asking their doctor more questions, or
yeah,
should the doctor be asking more questions?
Well, the doctors definitely should be asking more questions. The doctor, I mean, you have to recognize that all sources of information can have biases, but you should be going to the ones that where there's been an attempt to minimize the biases in that information. And there are places that can be used. So, for instance, in Canada, out from British Columbia, there's something called the Therapeutics Letter, which is produced by people who have no relationship with drug companies, and it's based on the best evidence that they can gather. This is a this letter is free. Anybody can download it and read it, although if you're not a doctor, you might need some help.
Doctor, just before we get to Tim, I want to go to Tim on the phone line. But if you had a wish, say this Christmas, Stephen Harper phones you and said, I've heard some of your interviews, I'm going to grant you a wish. Name me one drug you'd like to just nuke it, knock it off the market. What would it be?
Not easy to say.
Okay. You think about it while Tim shares a question. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, it's more of a comment, Andy, and everyone that's online. The topic itself behooves us all to just actually be more discerning, as I think Pam just said. But also, you know, the fourth leading cause of death thing doesn't shock me at all because, you know, have you looked around at our society? And people go to the physician, they get a prescription for a drug that has a risk and has a benefit, depending on what the thing is. But they don't take it properly. They abuse it. They more is better. They do this, they do that. I mean, look at our painkiller situation in the streets of London. And I just, so that part of it's a little bit misleading, although a very serious concern. I'm not discounting it. It's just the matter is people need to be smarter, and the problem is we can't teach that. So, you know, if I go to my doctor and he gives me a prescription for a drug, I take it the way it's prescribed. I don't think that more of a, I'll just use an example, a hypertension medication is going to make my blood pressure better. I'm going to take it the way he prescribed it.
Okay, you make a very good point. Let me ask Dr. Election to comment on that. We're not suggesting all of the blame and fault is with the drug company, Dr. Election. Obviously, there are other factors, such as patients who don't listen to the instructions carefully and misuse or even abuse the medication.
Everybody has a fault in this. Nobody is blame-free. And in terms of patients, what your caller said applies to some of them, certainly. But the other hand, people don't. The information that people get about drugs is often not very good. So one of the things that I found out being a doctor for the past 35 or so years is that if I just give people information verbally, most of that is going to be forgotten. So you need written information, but the written information that you get when you go to a drugstore is not necessarily very good.
So I'm going to ask you, when we come back, we're going to take a short break. We're going to ask you to wrap it all up in just a moment, directing people to where they can get the truth. Tim, I appreciate the call. Back with Dr. Lection in just a moment. Right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Yes, it is a very complex subject. The fact that prescription drugs are the fourth leading cause of death. We've been in conversation this hour with an expert on the subject, Dr. Lection, who we're delighted to say is a Canadian at York University. We have just a couple of moments left. Dr. Lection, would you give us some great advice, some takeaways in terms of where do we go to get the truth for a person like Ron, who called us and said he was given a very difficult choice by his doctor? Where do we go to get the truth about drugs?
I suppose that if I was to suggest one single source, and this is not an endorsement I don't get anything out of this. I would pick up a copy of a book that comes out of the U.S. called Worst Pills, Best Pills. This is produced by an organization called the Health Research Group, an offshoot of one of Ralph Nader's organizations. And for consumers, I think that's the single best source of information that they could use.
Terrific. Then make it tantalizing. Give me one worst pill. What's one pill on the worst list?
One pill on the worst list? Well, I would suppose that Avandia would be pretty high up there. Also, any of the weight loss drugs that are still on the market, I wouldn't suggest anybody use.
Now, Dr. Election, do you have a website yourself?
No, I don't.
Well, I'm going to direct people to your paper. It's called Institutional Corruption of Pharmaceuticals and the Myth of Safe and Effective Drugs. And people can download a copy online if you just look up that title.
Dr. Election, I have one more question, and it would take a person of your academic credentials to answer this. Are you ready?
Sure.
When are the Leafs going to win the Stanley Cup?
Well, I'll probably be dead by that time.
You know what? That's one answer I don't think anybody's going to challenge you on. I thank you so much for joining us this morning.
All right. Well, thanks very much for your interest in this subject.
Thank you, Doctor.
Pam, wrap up what he said in 30 seconds.
Well, I think that we basically summarized it when we said that people need to be more discerning. And if your doctor says that the drug is safe and effective, you need to keep asking your doctor more questions, because very commonly the doctors have not done a lot of the digging that they need to do.
Okay. Just before you go, Pam, I'm going to ask you one other question. What do you think Ontario's debt is?
Oh, I hate to think about how high it is. It's got to be into the billions.
You know the deficit is $12 billion. That's what we're adding to it.
Okay.
The figure is, and I don't know how many zeros this, by the end of this year, I can't even imagine. $272 billion.
And our healthcare system is contributing to the potential bankruptcy of this province.
And Ontario's collapsing.
Mm-hmm.
We could cry into our beer, or we could talk to the Canadian Taxpayers Federation in just a moment. They're having a news conference in about 5 minutes at the ground zero for mismanagement, waste, and corruption, the Mississauga gas plant. They're doing that in the next few minutes. We'll talk to them right after the 11 o'clock news right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.